are talking about the newly formed Wisconsin Paper Caucus on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is the top paper producer in the nation. We produce around 5.3 million tons each year, and that's according to the most recent data from the DNR. But paper is facing economic headwinds, which the Wisconsin Paper Caucus plans to address. Do you work in our state's paper industry? What do you want people to appreciate or consider about what the industry contributes to the economy? What issues do you want the Paper Caucus to focus on? We're at 800-642-1234. Scott Suter is the president of the Wisconsin Paper Council, which represents the state's paper mills and papermaking industry. He was formerly the Republican majority leader of the Wisconsin State Assembly, representing the 69th District for 14 years until 2013. Scott, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thanks for having me so much.
So last Tuesday, it was announced that the Wisconsin Paper Caucus had been created. Can you tell us about what this caucus is and what it will accomplish?
Sure. The Wisconsin Paper Caucus, it's a bipartisan, informal group. It's open to all members of the Wisconsin legislature. In fact, we have a representative that's been named by Governor Evers' administration to be part of this bipartisan caucus as well. We're also going to include thought leaders from throughout Wisconsin. So really, it's not a standing committee of the legislature, but it is an informal group that's going to meet from time to time, talk about papermaking issues, talk about the papermaking industry, but also work together. Its mission is to inform and educate policymakers and the public about the importance of papermaking and to formulate good policy ideas and construct those ideas to present to policymakers across the board. So it's really going to talk about, you know, the highlight, the history, the diversity, and the positive environmental contributions of the entire industry. So it's an educational tool, but it's also a way for policymakers to get together with thought leaders and discuss the industry and discuss the challenges, but also the opportunities as well.
Is this caucus the first of its kind, or have other administrations formed these working groups?
Well, the Wisconsin Paper Council had formulated a Wisconsin Paper Caucus a number of years ago, about 5-6 years ago, but it really didn't take off, and the structure was a bit different. So this really is the first of its kind in terms of the Wisconsin Paper Caucus in Wisconsin. There is a Congressional Paper Caucus. Folks like Congressman Mark Pocan and Senator Tammy Baldwin are members of that Congressional Caucus. It's a little more structured in terms of being strictly legislative than our Wisconsin Caucus. We're a little more diverse in our structure, but this really is the first of its kind in terms of the industry having a caucus that includes policymakers.
And your council, the Wisconsin Paper Council, had advocated for creating this informal working group. What hand did the council have in actually creating it, and who is going to be on it, and how will it, you know, be involved going forward?
Sure. Well, we have a number of legislators that are very interested in the industry. Some represent some of our members and some don't. But we work together with both sides of the aisle to determine and they determine themselves whom should lead the council, who is most interested. And again, this is informal. These are not going to be permanent structural leaders in terms of who is going to lead the caucus. But for now, the chairs, this is bipartisan. The chair and vice chair in the state assembly, the chair is State Representative Scott Krug. The vice chair is State Representative Katrina Shanklin, very strong supporters of the industry. And in the state Senate, State Senator Tom Tiffany, and the vice chair is State Senator Janet Buley. So we have good representation from throughout the state. Also, I should mention that the Wisconsin Paper Caucus's gubernatorial designee is Mr. Hank Newell. He's from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. He's actually the treasurer now of WEDC. We're very, very pleased to have that type of bipartisan representation. So we didn't pick the leaders, but we work with them and certainly going to work with them in terms of what opportunities and what meetings we have and work together to formulate a good agenda for the future.
Talking with Scott Suter, president of the Wisconsin Paper Council, which represents the state's paper mills and papermaking industry. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you work in Wisconsin's paper industry? What do you want people to think about or consider about the industry and its contribution to our state economy? Are you glad that the legislature is getting a paper caucus going? And was it a long time coming? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Dave now, joining us from Stanley. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind about the caucus?
Well, I mean, do people use paper anymore? It seems like everything's online and digital and everything. So why are we setting up something like this for a material that's not used anymore or is not going to be used anymore?
How is paper used in our lives?
Well, you'd be surprised. Thank you for your question, Dave. Actually, if you look, Wisconsin's the number one paper-making producer in the entire nation. And a lot of people don't know that. It's part of the reason that the Wisconsin Paper Caucus is going to invest in terms of its educational outreach. But there's a wide diversity of paper products made in Wisconsin. I mean, if you look at the specialty products manufactured right here in Wisconsin, look at microwave popcorn bags, receipts at gas stations, lottery tickets, beer and wine labels, adult diapers, and liners for advanced composites used in aviation, in the defense industry. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's not simply white paper. And while white paper may be on the decline because of electronic usage, certainly specialty products are on the increase. Look at Amazon. Look at the box board. Look at the brown paper. There's been an expansion, actually, in the industry, a $500 million expansion at Green Bay Packaging. There's been a $189 million expansion at ND Paper out of Buren. Paper is in every facet of our lives. And just the coffee that you're going to probably pick up at a Starbucks or a coffee shop, that's paper. Folks are moving from plastic straws to paper straws. Paper really does introduce itself into almost every facet of our lives. So it's not just white paper, and this is a strong, strong industry that has many specialty products that I'd love to go through. We just don't have enough time to go through them all.
Dave, thanks for the call. Let's go to Steve now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
Say, I was listening earlier today, you talk about manufacturing, and I was just curious, how many jobs does the paper industry produce in Wisconsin? I know it's enormous, but, talking earlier on the show about manufacturing, I mean, is it 10,000, 20,000? How many jobs does paper either directly or indirectly employ in Wisconsin?
Well, thanks for your call. Thanks for your question, Steve. If you look at overall employment, and this is from figures from 2018, the most recent data that we have, total employment throughout the entire industry, including forestry and wood products, pulp and paper, is about 55,000 people. So those are very good paying jobs. That's in the state of Wisconsin. Annual payroll income for those jobs is well over $3 billion, about $3.4 billion. But if you look specifically, pulp and paper, there's about 31,000 jobs in Wisconsin, good family-supporting jobs. Wood products alone, 19,000. Forestry and logging, about 6,000. So, the number of manufacturing facilities all throughout the state totals about 240. And again, this involves tax money as well, tax payments, $214 million per year. So it's a strong facet of our economy, a very large number of good-paying jobs that do support families throughout our state, and it's a very important industry.
Talking about the newly formed bipartisan Wisconsin Paper Caucus with Scott Suter as our guide. He's president of the Wisconsin Paper Council. The caucus is a bipartisan group working on policy that would benefit the state's paper manufacturing industry. What legislation do you hope to see the Paper Caucus draft? Or do you think we should be investing in other industries, perhaps here in Wisconsin, not paper? Do you live in a mill town? What is on your mind about paper jobs? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. We're talking about how a group of bipartisan lawmakers, stakeholders, have formed the Wisconsin Paper Caucus. They're working on policy that would benefit and promote the state's paper industry. According to the DNR, the industry has about 31,000 workers, making the state the number one producer in the nation. Thousands of jobs are closely linked to papermaking here, including pulp, papermaking machines, printing industries. Do you work in the industry? What do you want people to know about paper's economic impact on Wisconsin? We're at 800-642-1234. Scott Suter stays with us. He's president of the Wisconsin Paper Council, which represents the state's paper mills and papermaking industry, formerly the Republican majority leader of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Scott, the paper industry has certainly faced challenges in recent years due to a reduced demand for paper products and, you know, largely due to electronics and competition from overseas. How is our paper industry working to overcome those challenges?
Sure. Well, actually, there's been a resurgence in the industry. And while the industry certainly has met and experienced those challenges, it's meeting those challenges by moving into specialty products. And there's a great deal of research and development that continues to go on worldwide. And Wisconsin helps lead that effort. You know, if you look at specialty products that I mentioned previously, you know, the folks that are in the papermaking industry throughout the state are constantly looking at new ways to utilize fiber, looking at ways to utilize it's not just paper anymore. It's all of these specialty products that I mentioned. If you look at, you know, the film that is on a new TV that you buy, that you sort of take off, that protects it, that's a paper product. There are all types of new developments and new research that is going on that's, you know, really helping with the resurgence in the industry. The increases in terms of investment that I mentioned before, the $500 million that Green Bay Packaging is reinvesting, and the $189 million that ND Paper is reinvesting. You know, the success story of Midwest Paper Group, the resurgence there, that is really a heart-wrenching story that is a success story. And that's because of the new developments. It's because of pivoting toward what works in the industry. It's because, you know, folks are utilizing boxboard more than ever. And while white paper may be on a slight decline, other specialty products are on the increase. So it really is, it's a very good year. There's been an increase in jobs as a result. And that's good for Wisconsin. It's good for our taxpayers. It's certainly good for the industry. And Wisconsin continues to be, you know, the number one paper producer in the entire United States. We intend to stay there. And thanks to those investments, I think we're in really good shape for the future. But, you know, we want people to know. And, you know, I know the Wisconsin Paper Caucus, part of its mission is to educate about all of these products, all of the opportunities, and to keep this industry alive and well in the future by making good policy decisions.
Let's bring in Vern now, joining us from Boyd. Vern, hi. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, like I said, I used to work for the Milwaukee Journal when it was a big newspaper. They had between 300 and 400 pages in there on a Sunday. It was an immense amount of waste of lumber, so to speak, because we use our virgin timber. Now they're cutting all the small trees down. They're not replanting. And like Pope and Talbot, they left a huge amount of waste in Eau Claire there. And I could say more about Green Bay, but I won't get into where their waste went.
Well, let's talk about pollution here for a moment. Vern is bringing up pollution and using wood pulp from old forests and not exactly recycled content. So how is the paper industry broaching pollution?
Well, actually, the papermaking industry is very advanced in terms of the environmental initiatives, in terms of its commitment not only to protecting environmental quality, whether it's water quality or air quality, but it's also, look, this is a sustainable resource that we utilize, and part of this is management. So managing those forests, managing the trees, managing that renewable resource is very, very important. And, you know, the forestry industry itself, it produces and provides, you know, more than 64,000 family-supporting jobs and has an output of about $24 billion. But more importantly, you know, we make certain as paper producers working with foresters that the resource is managed properly, but also that, you know, we need a continual supply of that pulp and those forest products to make paper. And the management is the important part, and the papermaking industry does a fantastic job of managing and working in conjunction with great organizations like Trees for Tomorrow, like the Great Lakes Timber Producers Association. You know, working with other forestry organizations, we make certain that resource is managed properly, and also that, you know, the water and air quality is state of the art. Following rules and regulations, but even exceeding those rules and regulations is very important for the industry.
Let's look at discharge for a moment. More than two decades of legal fights came to an end last week when a judge signed off on an agreement that will require three paper companies to pay the rest of the Fox River PCB cleanup. And those toxic PCBs were used in making carbonless copy paper in the 50s and 60s. They were spread through wastewater discharges. How are companies in Wisconsin dealing with this legacy pollution?
Sure. Well, it's a new industry. I mean, that the paper mills throughout the state do follow all the rules and regulations that not only the EPA sets but the Wisconsin DNR sets. So, you know, what happened in the past is something that the papermaking industry has dealt with. But right now, you know, it is environmental quality is incredibly important to the companies that we represent, and it's also important to the entire industry. And so, you know, the quality of the water and the air that is utilized by our papermaking and our paper mills is really, like I said, state of the art. And we actually are leaders in making certain that air and water quality is top notch here in Wisconsin. So we are leading the industry in utilizing every type of environmental resource and the latest technology to make sure that our water is clean and our air is breathable for everyone.
Let's go to Stacy now in Rhinelander. Hi, Stacy.
Hi. Good morning.
What's on your mind?
I work closely with the forestry sector here in the Northwoods, and my question is, Scott, how can I get involved with the Wisconsin Paper Caucus?
Well, that's a great question, Stacy. Like I said before, we're trying to include a wide diversity of individuals and organizations and stakeholders. We are happy to take a look at individuals that want to get involved in the Wisconsin Paper Caucus. Like I said, we're including thought leaders and folks like yourselves that have an interest in the industry and have experience working in the industry. We'd love to find ways to include you in the Wisconsin Paper Caucus. It's not just for legislators and regulators. It's for stakeholders and thought leaders as well. We have a big tent with this organization, and while I don't choose who gets to be part of it, we certainly have input in that, and we're happy to be as inclusive as possible. So give us a call. We're happy to work with you, and the more the merrier in this endeavor.
Well, Kathy from Hudson called in to ask if the industry will be considering hemp, which can also be used to make paper. Do you see an opportunity there?
There might be. I had this question from Senator Lena Taylor the other day as well. And I know that Senator Patrick Teston has worked hard on this issue and has asked this question just the other day. I don't have the answer for that, but we are happy to work with industry leaders and we work with experts in the industry to see if that's a viable option for the industry. It may be. I'm not a hemp expert, but, you know, we're going to ask those questions and see if, you know, we're looking at all types of resource and resource development for the industry. This may be something that might work for the future.
Well, in December, former Governor Scott Walker reached a $28 million deal with Kimberly-Clark to keep its Fox Crossing plant open. In January, it told Governor Evers it would be moving forward on plans to close a smaller facility in Neenah. That said, do you think that subsidies are the answer in terms of how we can best support the paper industry right now?
You know, what we'd like for the Wisconsin Paper Council is for regulators and policymakers and leaders to take a look at the industry as a whole. And you know, subsidies may not be the answer, but what we would like is for regulators to take a look at the papermaking industry, the importance of the industry, and work with our council to determine what would work for the entire industry. You know, it's a very competitive industry, but our trade association is making certain that we do what's right for the entire industry. And working with policymakers like Hank Newell and Governor Evers and, you know, the Republicans and Democrats in the legislature, I think we can do that. But we don't want to do it necessarily company by company. We'd like something that works for the entire industry as a whole so we can move forward, you know, as a team.
Scott, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Scott Suter is president of the Wisconsin Paper Council, which represents the state's paper mills and papermaking industry. He was previously the Republican majority leader of the Wisconsin State Assembly. And we've been talking about the newly formed bipartisan legislative working group to develop policies that benefit the state's paper industry. Coming up, it's news. Then the State Capitol Report continues with a roundup from the Capitol and WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White guiding us through the developments. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It is that time for a roundup of news coming from the state capitol. You're with us for the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So let's start by rewinding to the news we got 1 week ago that Milwaukee will host the Democratic National Convention in July 2020. And in that announcement, DNC Chairman Tom Perez is counting down the days.
490 days, and we will have a discussion about how to retake our democracy in the city of Milwaukee. That discussion will not only ripple across Lake Michigan, it will ripple across the world.
How do you feel about Milwaukee hosting the DNC? What impact do you think it will have? What questions or thoughts do you have about the news coming out of the state capitol? And what would you like lawmakers to know? We're at 800-642-1234. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter, and she hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, thanks for coming by.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So we found out 1 week ago that we've got the convention in Milwaukee. What has the reaction been in the days since that announcement?
Well, Democrats are obviously very excited. We've heard from a number of Democrats that this sends, you know, kind of the right message to voters across the country that they're prioritizing the state of Wisconsin, the issues that are important to Wisconsinites. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett said that it was monumental that Milwaukee was chosen. It is kind of an interesting choice in terms of the size of the city compared to some of the other cities that have hosted the National Party conventions in recent years. It's a little bit of a smaller city than they've gone with in the past. That's been part of the discussion. Are there enough hotel rooms, et cetera? So an interesting choice. Republicans are also kind of weighing in a positive way in some ways.
Perhaps the economic impact.
Exactly. They're talking about that. And Governor Scott Walker tweeted, I've got the tweet here in front of me. He said, who would have known that part of our legacy, building the Fiserv Forum, would lead to the DNC picking Milwaukee for their convention? So you had Governor Walker tweeting pretty quickly after that announcement, sort of taking a little bit of credit for creating the space that Democrats ended up picking for their convention.
Well, moving on, Governor Walker announced the closing of Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake youth prisons before he left office. And we're starting to get more details on what we can expect as far as the replacement for the facilities. What did we learn last week from Governor Evers' plans?
So we got the first two new facilities that are going to be part of the network that's replacing Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. The first two are going to be located, one in Milwaukee and then one in the town of Hortonia in Outagamie County. So the governor announced those two last week. And then he also kind of laid out the groundwork for how the county-run facilities are going to move forward. Those two facilities are going to be run by the state. counties are going to run the others, and they have to submit grant applications to the state to kind of get that process going. So the governor laid out the committee that's going to review those grant applications.
So really putting the nuts and bolts behind the structure of how you get these facilities up and running. What are lawmakers and community leaders saying about the choice for the sites of the proposed facilities?
Well, you know, it was a really kind of mixed bag of responses. The Outagamie, particularly for that Hortonia facility, the Outagamie County executive, Tom Nelson, issued a statement, and he was pretty positive about it. He said, quote, "This affords us an opportunity to showcase our innovative reforms and find ways in which we can partner and collaborate for the benefit of all." But kind of the local officials in the area, this is according to reporting by the Waupaca County News, the Hortonia town clerk said that she was really surprised that they hadn't been consulted at all about it on a local level. She said she had taken concerned phone calls from residents of the town all day. She talked about concerns with zoning and permitting and just kind of the logistics of bringing a facility like this, how it might affect some of their other projects. And in that vein, the state senator that represents that area, Senator Robert Coles, said that the governor's office didn't really do a great job of making sure that local officials were informed ahead of time, sort of
involved in the process.
Right. You know, kind of on the same page, knowing when the announcement was going to come out. He said there shouldn't really have been an element of surprise here.
Laurel White is WPR's state capitol reporter. We're getting an update on all the political news flowing out of the capitol. What questions or comments do you have about the news coming from the state capitol? What would you like lawmakers to know? What issues would you like them to address? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel, Wisconsin has joined a lawsuit challenging President Trump's national emergency for the southern border. What have Governor Evers and Attorney General Josh Call said about the reason behind this decision?
This has been something that's been on the radar of Wisconsin executives for the past several weeks, really. And this decision was made last week, as you said. Attorney General Call said essentially Wisconsin decided to get into this multi-state lawsuit. I think there are 16 states involved. They wanted to do that because he believes that the national emergency is, quote, diverting, this is from a statement he released, diverting federal funds away from Wisconsin to pay for the border wall. So he said states really have skin in the game if the country moves forward with this national emergency. Governor Evers expressed some similar concern. He called the president's emergency declaration reckless and unconstitutional. He said this isn't how a democracy is supposed to work. So I think the thought behind this lawsuit is it's meant to be a bit of a check kind of on this executive authority that the president has used.
Well, meanwhile, last week, the Senate, U.S. Senate, passed a resolution to block the president's national emergency declaration, and President Trump vetoed that. Mm-hmm. Will this lawsuit that Wisconsin is now part of be the final decision when it comes to this border emergency?
I think that's the idea. You know, obviously, the president did issue his first veto on Friday. The country's moving forward with, you know, his declaration. And what we do know about lawsuits, certainly we're no stranger to lawsuits in Wisconsin. We've seen quite a few lawsuits over the past several years, and we know that they move slowly. So generally, you know, as the country moves forward because of the president's veto, it would have to be sort of a lightning speed lawsuit situation to really be able to change things quickly. Usually we're talking in terms of months and years, not days and weeks for lawsuits like this.
Congressman Mark Pocan says federal immigration officials arrested a number of Wisconsin residents without criminal records during last year's immigration sweep. And he had a press conference last week to talk about his concerns with ICE. Let's hear a bit.
This is an agency that's running rogue under the direction of this president. He is using it as his police force, his personal police force, in order to justify a wall. And I find this reprehensible.
So what does Congressman Pocan want done on Immigrations and Customs Enforcement?
So this is something that Pocan has talked quite a bit about over the past couple years. He's actually been one of the kind of figureheads of a movement to abolish ICE entirely. He pushed for that, saying that ICE needed to be dissolved and its responsibilities redistributed to other federal departments. He said it's just not fulfilling the duties that it was meant to when it was created. He's talked a lot about kind of like you heard in that quote, ICE kind of running rogue or going kind of far afield from what it was meant to do.
Does he have any specific tactics he wants to put in place, policy things that he wants to put in place to curtail ICE, to rein it in?
I think his thought is kind of reassigning these tasks to different agencies will kind of break up what I think he would call kind of a culture that exists within the agency, if that makes sense. He's talked a lot about the president's leadership and how that's enabled ICE to do things. Obviously, Pocan wasn't pleased or wasn't assured by the actions during that immigration sweep that happened last fall. That's why he requested these records. That's what created this press conference and got him talking. So this is something he's been uncertain about for a while. And I think, he has this philosophy of sort of starting back from really kind of step one with some of these things that ICE has been handling. And he's not calling for an abolition of all of the actions that they've taken or certainly the duties that they fulfill. He just wants them reassigned to different agencies that might handle them a little differently.
Are there any other lawmakers who have joined him in this effort or in this idea?
He did. He certainly had a coalition, but it wasn't a large enough coalition for this movement to really take off. I think it was something that I believe he works with the Progressive Caucus in Congress. I think that was something that the Progressive Caucus worked on and just didn't have the broad base of support to move ahead.
Well, let's look at lawsuits. Back to lawsuits. Wisconsin's lame duck legislative session has spawned four lawsuits, one of which will have its first hearing today. Mm-hmm. What is this case arguing?
So this case, we do have several lawsuits related to the lame duck session. This is a case brought by the League of Women Voters. And what they're arguing is kind of an interesting state constitutional argument, which is that lawmakers never had the power to call this special session to begin with because it's not particularly ascribed in the state constitution. So they said because lawmakers shouldn't have been able to do this, the entire session itself should be null and void. So it's not really arguing against the laws that were passed during the session, but the session itself.
What will you be watching for as you cover the hearing today?
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these arguments are laid out, what the counter arguments are, because this is a very procedural argument, and that's interesting. And as I mentioned, it doesn't have to do with sort of the implications or the laws themselves that were passed during the session. And I think another thing that has been personally kind of fascinating to me is what is the effect if lawmakers are found to have worked sort of outside the prescriptions of their power? What does this mean for previous extraordinary sessions? Does that sort of null out other things that have been passed by lawmakers in this format before? What does it look like going forward? I think that'd be particularly fascinating.
WPR's Laurel White is with us. Wisconsin is now part of a lawsuit to overrule President Trump's national emergency, as we talked about before. Do you support that decision? Do you wonder what this means for Wisconsin? What do you think about the lame duck legislative session lawsuits? We're at 800-642-1234. State Capitol Report continues in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're gathering up the news out of the state capitol here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Slowing down the developments, going one by one, do you have questions about Governor Evers' cabinet nominations? What questions do you have about the news coming out of the state capitol? And what do you want lawmakers to know? What issue would you like them to address? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White stays with us. Laurel, on this thread of lawsuit news, Wisconsin Republicans hired private lawyers in a suit brought against the state by Planned Parenthood. Can you break down what that lawsuit is challenging?
This lawsuit is challenging a number of Republican-backed state laws, including a law that bars advanced practice nurses like nurse practitioners from performing abortions in Wisconsin. Other requirements that are named in the lawsuit include a mandate that a woman must see the same practitioner for 2 required visits before receiving an abortion, and that a physician must be physically present when a patient receives a prescription for abortion drugs. And Planned Parenthood is contending that these laws place sort of undue barriers to women receiving abortions.
What is Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call's role in this suit?
So, of course, Attorney General Call's role as the Attorney General is to defend any state law that is challenged in court. Now, where this gets a little bit interesting is, of course, Attorney General Call is a Democrat. These are Republican-backed laws. And so Republican lawmakers have expressed some concern about how well he would defend them. And he has said that he will defend them and he will be there in court, but he hasn't outlined what his arguments would be. So that's where this private lawyer dynamic comes in. Republicans say, we believe these laws are very important. We want to fight for them. And so we are going to contract out and make sure that they have a particularly robust defense.
Because Call has a history of forwarding Planned Parenthood's agenda. Is that right?
That's according to Senator Scott Fitzgerald. So
okay.
He says he released a statement after it became public that Republicans wanted to hire these private lawyers. He said Attorney General Call is not signaling how he plans to defend Wisconsin's pro-life laws, and it's necessary for the legislature to attempt to intervene in this case. So it really is that argument of, based on, you know, Call's party affiliation, some of the public positions he's made in the past, Republicans are concerned about what sort of argument he would make in court to defend these laws.
So we'll kind of just see what happens there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a work in progress. Governor Evers, Cabinet Secretary nominee for the State Department of Safety and Professional Services, Don Krim, has been in the news, testified at a confirmation hearing before lawmakers last week. What were the major topics she was asked about?
So we have had these confirmation hearings over the past several weeks. Krim's confirmation hearing was interesting in that it didn't focus as much on issues facing the state or issues facing her particular department. There was quite a bit of focus on a 2005 felony child abuse charge that was filed against her, and just kind of how that was handled by the governor's office, how that charge was disclosed, when the governor's office knew about it in the vetting process, and sort of her, honestly, kind of her personal character and how she's experienced that, moved on from it, and how much lawmakers wanted to weigh that as they considered whether she was qualified to lead this department.
So what about her nomination is giving the Republicans pause?
You know, a lot of the Republican lawmakers that are on this committee have expressed that it isn't necessarily the act of child abuse itself, these charges, which, by the way, she was never found guilty in court. She agreed to take parenting classes and to not have any brushes with the law for 6 months in an agreement with the court for them to not go ahead and have a trial. Mm. And then actually later she appealed the charges to county officials, and county officials dropped the charges entirely. So it's kind of a little bit of a complicated case in that regard. But lawmakers said that instance in and of itself wasn't what they were most concerned about. They were concerned about how transparent the Evers administration had been with them about these charges. They said, hey, you know, if the Evers administration knew about these months ago when they were vetting Secretary Designee Krim, that they should have been upfront with lawmakers and said, this is something in her past. This is why we're nominating her regardless. You know, Governor Evers has said repeatedly that he believes that she's an extraordinary person. He emphasizes that she was never found guilty in court of these charges. And so I think lawmakers are pushing to say, why wasn't that argument given to us earlier on? Senator Chris Kapinga, who chairs the committee that would have to approve CRIM for her to go before the full Senate, he said having information like this come out, you know, kind of in the 11th hour is a little disconcerting.
Talking with Laurel White, she's WPR State Capitol reporter, as we move through developments at the state capitol. Laurel, Wisconsin has a Supreme Court election next month. April 2nd will be here before we know it. The winner of the race will replace Justice Shirley Abrahamson. Last week, one of the candidates got national support. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Yes. So national support isn't something that's been incredibly unique for state Supreme Court races in the past couple years. Former Attorney General Eric Holder has come back to Wisconsin to support the liberal-backed candidate for the state Supreme Court.
Lisa Neubauer,
mm-hmm. That's right. So Holder came in with his National Democratic Redistricting Committee, made an appearance for Neubauer, and said that the group is pledging $350,000 to run ads in support of her campaign.
Well, let's hear a clip.
And we tend to forget these state and local races that really on a day-to-day basis have a greater impact on people's lives. And that's why, you know, in an off-timed election, this is, you know, this is going to be April as opposed to November, we got to make sure that people understand that this is a consequential election, that this is something that they need to be engaged in.
So will Holder raise the profile of this race, and does Judge Lisa Neubauer want this kind of intervention?
Well, Holder has been successful in the past. You know, he contributed a fair amount of money and was physically present in the state for Justice Rebecca Dallet, who was successful in the last state Supreme Court race. So he certainly has a good track record of doing that. Where it does get a little bit interesting is that Judge Neubauer has not been incredibly warm in her reception of Holder's advocacy for her. She told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week that she did not want Holder's support and that she would recuse herself from cases involving his organization if they come before the state Supreme Court. She's been, I think this comes from her statements about not having outside spending, outside influence organizations involved in this election, whether it's for her or for her opponent. And, you know, she issued this statement. And then I believe Attorney General Holder came back and said, well, you know, that's kind of why we're supporting her is positions that she voices like this. So it's a bit of an interesting dynamic there.
So the two candidates participated in their first debate this past Friday evening. What have each of these candidates been saying about what, you know, what, why they're best for the job?
They're both really making this argument that they would be independent, fair, and impartial. And that's really where a lot of state Supreme Court races have gone in recent years. There's been kind of this bubbling up of partisanship and accusations about party affiliation or bias or undue influence from these outside groups. So I think each candidate in their own right is sort of pushing back on the perceptions of their party affiliation to the extent that they can and saying that they will be incredibly independent if elected to the bench.
And the Ideas Network extended invitations to each candidate to appear on Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can hear some of those conversations later this week on Central Time. Laurel, thank you for coming by.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And that is Laurel White, WPR's State Capitol reporter on the State Capitol Report. Just ahead, Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal calls for taking first steps in getting a handle on PFAS. We check in with a WPR reporter who's been following Wisconsin's approach to investigating these highly toxic synthetic chemicals. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.